This is the Great Western Inland Sea Podcast, and I'm here with my guest, Vinny Eastwood, from the Vinny Eastwood Show. How are you, Vinny?
I don't know, because one of those days, I just sort of went on a week's holiday, and it turns out on this week's holiday that I have to appear on three different people's shows, yours being the first.
And, well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, and also I have to cut together a number of documentaries, radio ads, and so on and so forth. So it's a working holiday, even if I'm not on live for this week.
You are a busy, busy man, and I definitely appreciate you doing this. How did you get into doing the Vinny Eastwood Show?
Mostly I was just sort of listening to InfoWars, Alex Jones, a lot, and kind of started to get really angry and aggressive and antisocial, as you kind of do. I didn't manage to fit in terribly well with my whole work environment. I really didn't like the people I was working with or the job that I was doing. I was a salesman, and I was really good at it too. I was making a shockingly large amount of money, but none of it mattered to me, because I just realized, look, I'm a freaking slave.
It's just money.
It's not that it was just money. It wasn't about that. It was more the fact that the people I was working with had no morals, no code of ethics, no honor, no truth. They were just scum, and they were beneath me. And it just turns out that that's basically almost every single job that I've been into. Everybody I've been working with has just been freaking beneath me. They don't really value being kind and generous and nice to people and doing what's right. They value getting paid at the end of the day. Whereas I valued doing what was right and valued caring about people, and I made more money than any of them. It was like they didn't want to. It was like there was something motivating them to get money that precluded them from being honest, decent people. It was just sickening to me, and it felt like I was in a toxic, poisonous environment, like a good apple in a bad barrel the whole time, and I just couldn't stand it. So I got myself a last paycheck. It's like $4,500 or whatever for the month's work, plus another $11,900 worth of mall shopping vouchers. Got myself a computer, got myself a camera, and just started attending protests and public meetings, filming it all, editing it, putting it up online, and that kind of thing. And a couple of years later, somebody gave me a spot as a co-host on a radio show. They liked me a hell of a lot better than the original host of the show, so they fired us both and gave it to me. And and this is kind of become my new reality, where I get appreciated for being the good, honest, decent, hard-working, generous person that I am, and don't get taken advantage of by ruthless, psychopathic criminal scum.
Well, I think that's with every job. There's kind of like this hierarchy of here you are, this little peon, and here they are above you, or they try to be above you. They try to make this out to be that you're way below them, and that's where you're going to stay.
Do they call you a peon because they're pissing on you?
Not technically, but they really are. I mean,
it's interesting how words are structured like that, eh?
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah. Like another one that's interesting like that is the European Union.
That's good. That's good. That's true too. And they got a Nobel Peace Prize, by the way.
Yeah.
Deservedly so, right?
It's ironically that they call it the Nobel Peace Prize because they don't seem very noble to me, or at least the recipients of late, anyway.
Not at all.
I mean, what do you got? You got a dude who bombed six countries getting a Nobel Peace Prize.
makes perfect sense, right? let's not forget about Kissinger.
What did Kissinger? Kissinger got a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah.
The military men are to be used as sacrifices for the New World Order. They're just useless eaters. They are stupid animals, and we should just kill them in order to make what we want to the world.
Oh my God, Kissinger, you're on to is a peace prize.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you very much. I've been working at this for quite some time, and there's an absolute need for a new world order and reward people who kiss the banker's ass and adopt their particular policies of scumbaggery. I'm very honored to receive this award. I don't like black people or women or things of that nature. I only like tyrants. Tyrants are my preferred motto, and that's why I hang around with George H.W. Bush and smoke cocaine with him, And we'll even do like a little trips out to Afghanistan so we can get some of that fresh heroin that we harvested straight off the fields in the CIA giant's $37 million airbase. Yeah, I'm Henry Kissinger, ladies and gentlemen, and you are listening to whatever the hell.
Exactly. It just baffles me that, like, he's not in prison. All these guys are running free.
I think it's because they own the prisons.
That's probably true, too. But, I mean, isn't there something we can do to you know, kind of push them toward... Maybe some kind of trick we can kind of just, you know, push them towards the trap door comes down. Oh, here you are. You're in prison now.
Well, here's a question. You've got to figure out if there's something I can do, right? Well, think about how many things are being done to you first. Ooh. Mm-hmm. That's quite a lot, actually, isn't it? I'm being taxed. I'm being poisoned. My water's contaminated. My air's contaminated. My food's contaminated. All the petrol companies and oil companies basically enslave me to their scumbaggery. So that means if you want to do something about it, you can do something about almost any of those things that are currently fracking you, as long as it's your passionate and what you really want to do in life. You know, let's say, for example, there's some people who are researchers into free energy, like Professor John Searle or whatever, the John Searle story. I was listening to a rebroadcast on my show the other day. And he's one person. He's developing a free energy device that goes against the current energy paradigm of alleged fossil fuels and so on and so forth, doesn't it? So he's doing his job. I figured out that the media is full of lies and manipulation, and they don't really care about any of the people that they're interviewing, no matter how bad things have happened to them, you know. And so I started up a radio show and a YouTube channel and stuff like that, and sure enough, I'm beating them on YouTube. I've actually got more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald TV, which is the second most subscribed YouTube news channel in New Zealand, and that's mainstream media. They're like the New York Times of New Zealand, and I'm beating them the frack out of them. Like,
that cracks me up.
Got nearly
Seriously.
Double what they got.
I think that's the shift, though. I think people are they know that they're being lied to by the mainstream media, and they want to seek out some new information, and you're offering it to them. So,
well, I'm not just offering information. I'm also offering. I mean, like a lot of people,
you're offering truth.
There's a lot of things that are on offer at the Vinnie Eastwood Show, I must tell you. truth, lies, sex, scandal, videotape. You know, the whole nine yards, the whole ball of wax, What I've found very fun about doing the show is that I can say pretty much anything on American Freedom Radio, apart from, you know, FCC-regulated words. So I've come up with, you know, pseudonyms for them. So instead of saying...
Like fracking.
Fracking. I say frack instead of the F word, like for frack's sake, or talk about the flux capacitor when I say for flux's sake. You know, and instead of saying the S word, you say Shiite Muslim, and so on and so forth. And, you know, like a whole Vinnieism dictionary down here of like swear words that aren't swear words, so that I can actually properly express myself. And ironically enough, instead of these swear words being offensive and describing how I feel, they're actually kind of comedic, and they turn something that should ordinarily be negative into something freaking hilarious. And I think that's actually the real reason why people should listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, is not necessarily because we've got great guests and great information, although it is those things. It's more the fact that you have fun while you're doing it, and you have a few laughs, and at this point in time, you look around and you think about how many laughs there are to be had, you know. And sure enough, if you're actually looking, like really, really looking deep into geopolitical issues, Fukushima or so on and so forth, ain't too many laughs to be had.
It's pretty dismal. Pretty dismal.
Yeah, and so you've got to falsely manufacture, at least some kind of comedy out of it. Otherwise, you're going to get sick from all the stress, aren't you?
It's true. And you do that. You're very charismatic, and you have kind of a comedic approach to it. Even though it's not, the material's not comedic, you make it, I wouldn't even say fun, but you make it approachable in the sense that you know, you're not going to get so upset. When Alex Jones is screaming at you, he's screaming at you. You're not screaming. You're just, you know, you're saying like it is, but you're not screaming. I think that's why Alex Jones gets such a bad rap. He's you know, he gets so irate.
Well, you know, I think initially you do need to get irate. That's why he's good. It's like when you go into school or whatever, you know. Alex Jones is like your primary school. He's like the truther that you listen to when you want to kind of know the real nasty kind of details of stuff that's going down. And he's great for that. He's got amazing documentaries and so on and so forth, where he's not screaming and yelling, and he's very calm, acceptable approach, incredible filmmaker. He's really done a number on the New World Order system by exposing it so exquisitely with a lot of his documentary film work, which I think people really underrate him for, and that's actually the real kind of balanced, cool, calm, working, methodical Alex Jones coming through in those works. And the radio show seems to be, he uses it much in the same way I do, I suspect, of just being able to vent, because... Mm-hmm. We're both very angry men, and I'm angry for a lot of reasons. You know, there's a lot of stuff that I've gone through in my life that still sort of irks me, and a lot of it's all my fault, and blame myself, and so on and so forth. So naturally, you become really, really angry all the time at yourself. And if you've got a sounding board, if you've got other people out there that are also angry about stuff that's going on, and you, instead of using that as a way to supercharge your rage, you use that as a way to compare notes, to sort of have empathy for other people's situations, and to really listen and actually show that you care. 'Cause I had a lot of people on the show who are just the stuff that's happened to them. You know, like having your house burned down or raided with 70 cops, guns pointed at your children's heads.
Couldn't even imagine.
I mean, it's just that kind of stress, that kind of pain, that sort of hurt. And then you see the way mainstream media interviews these people, as if they're trying to interrogate them, as if they're trying to, you know, get something on them or dirt on them. It's like, how dare you? You're just callous scum. Whereas
they're treated like victims, you know. Are they treated them like the perpetrators are the victims, and the victims are the perpetrators?
Yeah,
you know, that's the way they've always done it.
Yeah, and I don't stand for that kind of thing. I mean, I've put more New Zealand activists on air than any entity in the entirety of the world's frickin' history. I've done that by myself. Because I care a lot about the activists, because I understand that my job is meaningless without them doing their job. You're like, they're now, as far as I'm concerned, the closest thing to a reporter that the human race has left. They've done all the research, they've read through the government documents, they've exposed scumbaggery ad nauseum, and nobody will give them time on air to relay that very important, crucial information about what the government is doing and how the nation is being run. And they get reduced to a 4.5 second frickin' soundbite. You know how much information you can squeeze into 4.5 seconds?
4.5 seconds. That's just it, though. Do you think that the government? Well, obviously, this is not even this. But the reason that they want to crack down on the internet so badly is because all this information is leaking. It's not because of copyright issues or any of that nonsense. It's because they don't want this information getting out to people, because they want their secrets kept secret.
Yeah, but also at the same time, knowing these secrets, like, for example, a lot of people approach me and go, what do I do? What do I do? And it's like, do you know all the secrets? And it's just like, well, of course I don't. There's too many of them to know them all. And I say, well, mate, that's the reason why you're not doing anything right now, is because you're still confused. You don't actually know what's going on. I know what's going on only because I speak to people who know about different aspects of what's going on in one little sector, you know? Like, if you, let's say, I don't know, ballpark figure, there's 100 sectors of scumbaggery. government agencies, criminal organizations, particular individual mafioso kingpins of the government, and so on and so forth. Let's say, give or take, there's 100 issues. And I've interviewed 100 people for 2 hours a pop on each and every one of those issues, give or take, right? So I've developed something that each of those 100 people doesn't have: perspective.
Right.
When you over-specialize, you only know one thing about one thing. But when you generalize, like I do, you know a little bit about a lot of things. And so if there's ever a point where you want something done specifically, or you want a piece of information, or you want a piece of legislation to work for some particular reason, or you want to break down things that are going on that are being reported in the media, I'm at a very, very benefited position. That I've created basically to a large extent all by myself. You know, there's support from listeners. Occasionally people volunteer and produce, organise me guests every now and again. But ultimately I'm the one who's sitting down here editing the videos every day, uploading the archives every day, interviewing the guests themselves. And it's a lot of responsibility, because when you think about it, if you're talking to people who have had their lives threatened because of what they know, who are currently under surveillance, and these are the only people that you virtually now have time to hang out with to a large degree. You know, I hang out with listeners on occasion. You know, they'll message me on Facebook, invite me out for a drink or whatever, and I'm all too happy to accept because it's a stressful job. And I think Jack Blood told me one time, you know, there's two general rules to be a radio show host. One is drink. If I didn't drink, I would have gone crazy a long time ago. And secondly, is take the money. If people offer you money, they're not telling you to do anything bad, and they're simply giving you a monetary reward for the good work that you're doing. And they're not compromising you, and you're not compromising yourself by doing it. Just take the frickin' money. Just accept the generosity, because right. Otherwise, you're not going to have any kind of longevity, are you? And that's why a lot of big radio show hosts and what have you burn out, is because they're too afraid to ask for help, and they're too proud to accept it if it's offered.
That's true. Do you think, going back to Alex Jones for a minute, the reason that people don't take him seriously is because he's making so much money now?
I don't know. I haven't heard any words to that effect, that people aren't taking him seriously, because the vast majority of what he talks about happens to be true. It's the reason why he's gotten so popular in the first place. I mean, you can poke holes at this, that, or the other methodology, but on the whole, he's done probably more for the truth movement than any other single living person in history. He's certainly done a lot more than David Icke, a lot more than George Norrie, in order to revitalize and bring up the truth movement aspect, to take the fight directly to the cabal. I mean, think about the Bilderberg conferences and things like that.
Right.
A lot of the large reason why there are now crowds outside of Bilderberg conferences and people saying, we're not your scum, we're not your slaves, is because of Alex Jones making that film Endgame and really exposing it and then creating a movement around to stop it. And that's the real power that he has. And he uses his power sometimes in a way that isn't very nice to people. And I've talked to a lot of people behind the scenes who used to be, like, I've talked to his former producer, I've talked to his former stand-in radio host, I've talked to a lot of people who were basically there at the beginning of his career and halfway through it, and so on and so forth. And some of the stories that they tell me about things that he's done to them and to others is just really frickin' horrific. Like, it reeks of criminality Just real kind of megalomania, right?
And yeah.
And I spoke to George Norrie about this. And you ever listen to George Norrie, you don't see a touch of megalomania about him. He's very calm. He's very reserved. He's very receptive. He's very kind to people. He actually
seems rational.
He listens very intently to people, and he really cares. He's non-offensive. He doesn't get into fights with anybody. He doesn't yell. Doesn't scream. And I asked him, how do you do that? How do you get to the point of having 29, 39 million listeners a night and still remain really down to earth and not turn into some form of douchebag? And he says, you've got to talk to the people. All the time, everywhere I go, I'm always talking to the people. There's the average Joe on the street, the person who I'm sitting next to in a taxi or a bus or whatever. You always really just got to genuinely care and talk to everybody that you see. And that way it keeps you rooted, it keeps you down to earth. Because the thing that I think breeds an elitist mentality in people is when you say to yourself, oh, I don't have time for that kind of person, but that person's got such and such and blah, 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 massive freaking career, all big names and lights and so on and so forth that I really want to be seen associated with, so I'm going to go associate with them. Instead of talking to this average person on the street for 5 minutes while I'm on my way somewhere. And you don't realize that if you're like somebody's virtue hero or whatever, just giving them a hug or talking to them for 5 minutes can really kind of make their day and change the entire direction in their life. You know, you can do that. I mean, imagine people who met Bruce Lee or Muhammad Ali or something, and imagine being able to tell the story, I spoke to Muhammad Ali for 5 minutes or whatever. You say Alex right. Jones is like the Muhammad Ali of the truth movement to a degree. He does float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
He certainly does. He certainly does. And I think, you know, he gets a lot of – I think both sides are kind of after him because he's on one side, the mainstream wants to completely shut him down. And there's people in the truth movement themselves that have kind of like branched off and don't want anything to do with him. And there's always those little you know, sections of people that kind of bring down the original intent, I think.
Well, does anybody know how much work he's done into it? I mean, like, let's say it was all handed to him on a silver platter. I could understand people, you know, being really anti him and angry at him and so on and so forth, and jealous and so on and so forth. But, you know, when he's pulling 70, 80-hour weeks, doing 7 days of radio every week, been doing it for like 20 years, gotten all the calling up advertisers himself, phoning into other people's radio shows and calling in and making comments and getting people to do his, doing all this marketing, doing the copious quantities of research, writing all these articles and appearing on television shows from all around the world and flying around, bullhorning, protesting, filming, recording, you know, dude.
It's got to take a toll. It takes a toll somewhere. Yeah.
There's an old saying. Everybody ends up exactly where they deserve to be.
It's probably true.
And if he's in a position where he's got all that power, he's got all that audience, and he's also got a lot of flack, he deserves every bit of it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he might. He might.
So, I think it comes with the territory, and you got to accept that. I mean, I'm like a flea on the ass of an elephant by comparison to the T-Rex of talk radio. And yet I have people constantly calling me and referencing that I'm kind of like the Alex Jones of New Zealand and so on and so forth, and that's a really big honor. I remember a couple of years back when I was first starting up, a guy starts up his YouTube channel for all his just normal YouTuber, just watching videos and so on and so forth, and he's got like his big banner up the top of his channel that says there's three people you should be listening to: David Icke, Alex Jones, and Vinny Eastwood. And it's like, whoa,
that's pretty big company there.
And you know, to be honest, I think that I absolutely deserve that kind of mantle. You listen to the Alex Jones show, you listen to David Icke speak, and then you listen to the Vinny Eastwood show, and you could really kind of think to yourself, in terms of how much it makes you think, in terms of how informed you feel afterwards, in terms of its actual effect on your mind, your consciousness, your level of intelligence, your level of empathy for the other people around you in this world, there really is that kind of comparison to be drawn, because I'm very intuitive. I really care about people, and I think it's like if somebody actually cares, like we're not talking about just playing around here. If somebody actually cares enough to give up their entire life in order to see that people who have important information are being heard and being listened to and are being cared about, don't you think that's worth a listen?
It certainly is. The thing is about you and Alex Jones and even David Icke is the fact that you're not exactly doing this to become celebrities. You're doing this to inform people. But the subject matter you're touching on is not it's not happy. It's very depressing, like we talked about before. So the things you're talking about aren't, you know, if you do become a celebrity, it's like you get there in a very, like, you know what I mean? It's not like you're out there, you're not in movies, you're not writing for Time, People magazine. These are very hard subjects to speak about. Well, in a lot of ways,
it's not that hard for me because I guess I've been I've had a bit of a pain in the ass life, you know, and been used to people not listening to me. I've been used to being on the kind of the outsides, on the fringe, and having people judge me before they know me, or having people betray me, and so on and so forth. So I'm a perfect candidate to go into talk radio. Because talk radio is a nest of freaking thieving scumbaggery vipers and egotistical mindsets, and just some bad people in this industry, man. And on the mainstream side, they're freaking even worse, you know. And people make the mistake of when you go off topic. Hold on a second here. I want to just note this down. Okay, the psychos in radio, and the other thing I wanted to say there was about kind of how you deal with this, and the reason I'm doing the radio show actually has nothing to do with the information. Okay, I'll just come right out and say there. I'm not out to inform people. I'm not out to wake people up. That's not my intention. Not at all. You know, if people do get woken up or informed or something like that, that's all good. But that's a side effect. There's only three things that I'm supposed to do: make you laugh, and because when you're laughing, this information, this terrible freaking situation, regardless of what aspect you're talking about, no matter how traumatic it is, if you can turn it into a joke, it loses its power over you. You cut through that fear. You cut through that frustration. Biochemically, there's a lot of endorphins that get released into the bloodstream that relieve a lot of stress. Being a truth is very stressful. Okay? And
absolutely, it is.
There's some people who say that conspiracy theorists are only coming up with all of these conspiracy theories in order to make themselves feel better, in order to make themselves think that there's something that they know about the world.
How would that make you feel better?
Yeah. It makes us feel comfortable to know that there's somebody in control, is basically their thing. It goes back to like this, some frickin' bullshit, basically.
There's a giant foot stepping on all of us that makes us feel really great.
Yeah. And their logic just is non-existent. It's not there. It doesn't make any sense what they're saying. And that's because they can't make sense of what we're saying, because they don't think, right? That's what university teaches people. It doesn't teach you critical thinking. It teaches you how to be critical of people who can think.
That's right. But lately, I think maybe you've seen it too, is that I think the conspiratorial minds are coming around and more people are kind of grasping that.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many people are coming around, because they come around getting angry, depressed, getting isolated from their friends and their family, getting fired from their jobs, getting disillusioned with the entirety of their life that they've been working on for their entire existence and stuff like that. And there's nobody out there who's just like a full-on truther council session at large, you know, kind of thing. You go into a psychiatrist and you say, I'm really stressed out about the reptilians, bro. Oh, my God.
here's some drugs.
They're going to try to eat my children. They just play with drugs or whatever. So if anybody out there is feeling stressed, you're feeling unhappy, your friends aren't listening to you, they're calling you a crazy conspiracy theorist or something like that, or your family stop inviting you to Christmas dinner because they can't stand your political talk and so on and so forth, you go onto YouTube and you search Counseling for Truthers, Vinnie Eastwood. Counseling for Truthers, Vinnie Eastwood. And you watch that episode that I did, and I just sat there and to tell people all of these problems that you go through socially as a truther, and how to freaking deal with them, how to go about them properly. For example, you got a family that doesn't want to listen to you and doesn't want to listen to your conspiracy theories? Well, guess what? They don't have to, and you shouldn't be trying to force the truth on them. What happens when you try to force anything on anybody? They get really effed off, don't they?
They sure do.
How did the mainstream media and the apparatus brainwash your parents into, or your family members, or your brothers, sisters, or whatever? How did they get brainwashed into thinking that you're the crazy one? Very slowly, with little bits of information and little ideas injected every now and again. Okay? So, you've got to remember something. You got along with your family before you became a conspiracy theorist, right? Right? Didn't you? Well, what were you doing with them before you became a conspiracy theorist? Were you playing cards with them? Were you watching a movie with them? Were you doing gardening with them? Were you playing bridge? Were you having a few drinks with them? Were you making a meal or something like that? Go back to those very important roots and so on and so forth. The reasons why you got along with your family members at all in the first freaking place. And actually just show them that you're still the same person, even if you're now thinking differently. And after a while, they start to realize that you actually know what you're talking about, and then they start listening to you because you're still that familiar person and they still feel comfortable. They still feel like they know you and they still feel like they can trust you, all right? If they're the really aggressive kind, on the other hand, who won't accept anything, then you really can't talk about the conspiracy stuff to them around. But there's many, many things that people will be willing to accept in order to break into the conspiratorial world. There's, you know, have you ever heard the phrase, there's many paths to the truth? You know, there's no just one path. You know, we've got Satanists who turned away from Satanism and went into the truth movement. We've got hardcore Bible-bashing Christians who started to figure out about the Jesuits and the Vatican and so on and so forth and left their church and became a truth activist. We've got Christian pastors and so on and so forth who are now exposing child kidnapping and pedophilia within the church system and so on and so forth. It doesn't matter where you are or what you used to be doing, you will find a path to the truth. If you figure out what your parents or your family's ticks are, then you can talk to them about those particular subjects. Other ones will be outside of their paradigm and they just will get angry at the moment. You can mention it once and they won't be receptive. Don't mention it again. Okay? It's what I call the information grenade.
See how it works, yeah.
You pull the pin, you throw it, you throw the grenade into the room. And if it goes off, luckily you're out of the room by then. All right?
That's true.
It takes about 7 different people to tell you the same thing before it sinks in. Not you saying the same thing to them 7 times, but 7 different people saying the same thing to them. All you got to do is play your part. You say the one thing, then leave it. And you go back to playing your card game with them.
Do you think it works like a kind of incrementally, especially with me? When did you like discover all of this nonsense with the state and all of this, just this nonsense in general that we've been fed?
I think that was probably my first year at university when I got busted for selling weed.
That'll do it.
Yeah. You get caught with 13 grams of cannabis. And you might go to jail for up to 8 years. They treat it more seriously than manslaughter.
For a plant?
No, not even for a plant. Just a couple of pieces of tinfoil with some weed inside them that accumulated totally to 14 grams and could have gone to jail for up to 8 years, right? That's less than $200 if you bought it by the half ounce. I mean, you just think about that. Okay, how long would it take to incarcerate? How much would it cost? It costs about $90,000 a year, between $25,000 and $90,000, depending on whether or not you're minimum security or maximum security, in order to ingrain you for a $200 worth street value.
Jeez.
You know?
Yeah, that's worth it.
Yeah, but I was lucky. You know, I got away with 300 hours community service. The person in front of me was up for sexual assault, resisting arrest, and growing 5 cannabis plants. He got 150 hours community service.
Really?
The guy in front of him just got out of heroin rehab and stole a jar of Craig's raspberry jam from the local BP service station. And he was ordered to pay $4.32 in order to pay back BP for the jar of Craig's jam that he stole.
Well, he stole from BP. What do you expect? You know?
You just think about this. It cost him a couple of $100 to hire a lawyer to prosecute this person for the theft of a jar of jam.
You know, BP can do it.
What the hell is the point? And it's just like everything seemed like totally insane and totally corrupt. And the places where they hold these courts and everything like that, it's just bad vibes, man. Like I can feel vibes, man. And oh my God, they've got these stone buildings that have had countless, numerous people be sentenced to jail for years and years and years, and all that negativity just gets retained inside these things.
Inside the walls, yeah.
Yeah, and it can't get out, and there's always more suffering and more pain and more persecution and prosecution and punishment and slavery and scumbaggery coming through those doors every single frickin' day. And you walk into this place, and it's like, oh my God, it's like being stepped on. It's like you're a cockroach being stepped on. That's what it feels like inside these court buildings in New Zealand, man. Just bad people, bad vibes, bad experience, and bad results, legally speaking, every single step of the way. And when it hits you, and that's why a lot of people don't become activists or whatever, because they don't become a victim of the system. That's ultimately what kind of made me figure out that everything was fracked, that you can't trust police, that the court system's corrupt, that the laws are BS, that everything started to unravel in my mind. And it took me a good year, you know, working off that community service before I summed up the inspiration to go back to university. And when I did, I was just like, you know what? None of this is helping me. You're learning about vectors and frickin' cosine bloody shapes and economic formulas and business model proofing and so on and so forth and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, none of this knowledge is of any practical value or benefit whatsoever. Nothing of it really connotes any really powerful, resounding education or proper truth or enlightenment to it. What the hell is the point? And you do this where you do these essays, right? And they give you a number of different subjects you could possibly do the essay about. Student film and media studies, and they gave me the option of doing an anti-television discourse essay. All right, basically to diss television, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's what I'm."
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. And I had this idea in my head that television gave people tiny packets of information, you know, like 30-second news stories, and then on to the next one, and that they wouldn't be able to remember it or be able to decode the news properly, that it doesn't give them truth, it gives them propaganda, it doesn't give them information, it gives them misinformation, it doesn't give them a pleasant experience where they actually learn something at the end of it, it gives them a jarring kind of manipulative experience, where they gradually manage to form the ideas in your own mind for you. That was my idea. And then I started reading all the recommended source materials of anti-television discourse. And all of these authors for like 30, 40, 50 years ago were saying it'll compress people's intelligence levels, it'll mind control them, it'll start to help them to develop their thoughts for them and so on and so forth. Like almost everything that I was thinking independently had already been thought of by people who've been criticizing television since its inception.
You've been to America, haven't you?
No, but all our television shows are American. And and so I wrote this essay.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Most of them
anyway. American television is huge everywhere, but we get the cream of the crop. Like we get the best television shows because most of the American television shows that I've seen, like on the internet and so on and so forth, and when I was there for a short period of time when I was 14, was just terrible. So anyway, I write this essay, brilliant essay, you know, and like you can tell by how I speak that I'd write pretty good.
Absolutely.
And I showed this to my an English professor, a friend of mine, who's one of my best mates from school's father, and he said, "Mate, that's brilliant, that's awesome, hand it in." So I handed it in to my film and media studies tutor, and they gave me a D-.
What was their reasoning? Do they ever give you a reason?
No. So naturally, I had to invent one. They seemed very positive about television. They said that it gave people something to relate to each other about, and that it brought people closer together through a shared experience. And I completely disagreed. Because if you're friends with somebody, because they watch the same television show of you. That's not exactly the basis for a healthy relationship, is it? It's a very vacuous and benign and pathetic and insignificant connection in which to base an entirety of a human relationship, which actually is a necessity for your goings and comings and goings in the world, is it not? Your relationships with other people.
You know, I mean, take a look at, you know, sports fans, for instance, in America, crazy, crazy sports fans. You know, they go, "Oh, well, we're part of the same team. You know, we like the you know this team or that team." You know,
yeah.
No, that's your connection, huh? Okay, well, good for you.
Yeah. So basically, the idea is collectivism versus individualism. Because I wanted to think how I wanted to think and have relationships with people for real reasons, they gave me a D.
That's the way our education system works. If they don't believe what you, if you don't believe exactly what the way they think, well, that's you know.
John Lennon's mother told him once. She asked him, you know, what's the point of life? And she said, the point of life is to be happy. And so he goes, oh, okay, then. And he goes into school, and the teacher gives him an assignment on what you want to do for a career, what you want to do with your life. And he said, well, I want to be happy. And the teacher said, you don't understand the assignment. and young John Lennon says, well, you don't understand life. You know?
It's, yeah, I mean, we, people don't want to be happy. I mean, if you go through the system the way you're supposed to, I don't know if you will be happy.
Well,
you'll be.
The system teaches you to crave things that won't make you happy. Basically, this new phone will make you happy. These really nice shoes will make you happy. That hat will make you happy. That car will make you happy. That house with the gadgets on the outside and the security alarm, that will make you happy. These bars on your windows, that will make you happy. This car with impressive fuel economy and a DVD player for the kids in the background, so you don't have to pay any attention to your children on the road trip anymore. That will make you happy. And it's all a big freaking lie. Edward Bernays, who's the writer of the book in the corner of the term propaganda, used to work for the propaganda department during the First World War, and he came out, he used the suffragettes, he gave women cigarettes and got them to smoke them on these suffragette parades in order to get women to smoke, and it freaking worked. He got people to use hog fat that they called bacon. It's like the lowest quality cut of pork that you can get in your life, and he says, you can't have your eggs without bacon in the morning. This guy, he freaking coined bacon and eggs and so on and so forth in order to get rid of industrial pork waste product, you know? This is how the entirety of marketing and manipulation and the human need for happiness has been manipulated so that it benefits those who want to sell you crap, both verbal crap and physical crap, all day, every day. And make you believe that by consuming it, by purchasing it, by putting up with it, that it will make you happy. And unfortunately, it's a big freaking lie. So a lot of people will be walking around their life, and they've gotten used to deceiving themselves for so long that they don't realize just how freaking miserable they are. And then all of a sudden, their medication runs out, and they go off and they kill a few people and then suicide themselves.
That's the way existence. It's a very vacuous existence, you know, when you think that way. What is the answer? I mean, do you I know people are turning more towards the internet for information.
It's like I said, you know, look, you're being assaulted in many, many ways. You're being brainwashed in many ways. You're being physically attacked.
Psychological assault, right.
Psychological, psychotronic, manipulation. You've got misinformation. You've got poisons in your water, your food, in your air, and so on and so forth. You're being insulted. Basically, if you could conceive of any particular part of your body, internal and external, both physical and metaphysical, you're under complete and utter attack from all sides at all times of every single frickin' day. Believe it. That's a really depressing thought, isn't it?
A little bit.
Here's what's encouraging. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as you're resisting every single day one of the things that is enslaving you. And then you feel like, oh my God, I'm actually doing something against that which is effing me off. That makes me feel better about myself. That makes me feel like I'm accomplishing something. There, I'm being attacked in a million ways, but I'm fighting back in one way and winning.
Right. I think that by speaking about this, even by all the people starting all these podcasts and websites and all of this, it's a step in the right direction, I think, as a human consciousness, I think. Eventually, the people that are in control will, I wouldn't say step down, but realize that they might not have the stranglehold they had before.
Well, it's a confusing thing to think about, because what you're talking about is like winning or losing. You know, what do you define as winning? What do you find as losing? I define winning, like at the end of the day, winning, to maintain personal sovereignty. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Nobody can tell me what to do, and I can't tell anybody else what to do, and nobody can force anybody to do anything, right? That would be my ideal. That would be like winning for me. However, it's a long way off. So, what you do is, instead of thinking about your big win or your big loss, which is I live in slavery forever as opposed to live in freedom forever, you have to count your winnings, all right? You know when you're playing poker and you've got a big stack of chips, you know how good it feels to actually just count up. You know what? I only started with this much chips, but now I've got this much chips. Isn't that awesome? And I still haven't won the game yet, but I still feel pretty great about my position, don't I?
Cash out while you can.
No, you don't even have to cash out while you can. I say you go all in, mate. You go all in for the big win. And that's what people aren't really prepared to do in a lot of ways. They ain't prepared to sacrifice everything that they've got, because they think that everything they've got is theirs and it won't be taken away from them. That's not true. Everything you have, your own thoughts, your kids,
nothing is yours,
your home,
right?
Your car, your frickin' iPhone.
Your body.
Everything belongs to the government and the bankers at the moment. If you don't believe it, I've got some evidence to show you. Okay? There's no escaping the fact that you are a slave and you belong to somebody else. And they can, if they want to, just come and kill you at any point. So, can I ask you a question? Knowing that, now that I've told it to you, that you're a slave in every single way, do you want to keep going on with doing what you're doing? Or do you want to change something? Do you want to switch it up? Do you want to play a different game now? One where you make the rules, one where you've got the game rigged and they can't win, one where you are the house, where they're the one that's gambling you and all the one that's a safe bet?
Absolutely. You know, I think everyone wants to keep playing. They're just not, and you say, you know, that will make you happy, and people still search out this false happiness, you know? And everyone gets in that rut, you know, and I think we're in kind of a spiritual rut right now, where we do seek out these mundane activities that supposedly, you know, will generate happiness, but they never do.
Yeah, they don't generate happiness. They kind of usually produce some kind of penis, jammed right down your freaking throat. That's what's going on right now, and that really fracks me off is that everything's over sexualized. Everything's over convenienced. Like we just went down the shop to get something, you know, about an hour or so before coming on the show today, and my mate was like, "Oh my God, we're already here. That's convenient." And I go, "Yeah, most convenient stores are." And it occurred to me right then is that, look, not everything is as it appears to be, but some things are exactly as they appear to be. You know what I'm saying? and I think, you know, look, just realizing that everything's fracked or something like that, just believing that there's a whole bunch of ruthless criminals, psychopathic scumbaggery, child raping, Satanists, sacrificing, blood drinking, AIDS vaccine funding kind of bankster scumbaggery agents of the New World Order out there that control everything. Just because that's a fact doesn't mean you can't have a few laughs. I mean, you know, after all, it's just the end of the world.
Exactly. Have fun while the ship sinks.
Yeah, I mean, bro, you think about that movie Titanic and those dudes who were playing their instruments, you know, and playing the violins and stuff while the ship was sinking around them. Gentlemen,
yeah, shouldn't we be those guys?
Gentlemen, it's been an honor to play with you tonight. Good night. You know, that kind of thing. You know, we don't need to frack around and let the stress get to us, because look, when you're stressed, when you're afraid, that's when your thinking process starts to turn off. That's what people don't understand. If you're afraid, your ability to think turns off. It doesn't get limited, it goes off, as if it's not even there. And the way to alleviate this fear is to stop taking it so frickin' seriously. All right? Look, bro, you're going to be exterminated. So frickin' what?
Everyone is.
I ain't exterminated yet, am I?
And seriously, you think you're going to hang on to this body forever? You're not. You know, people are freaking out about, like, tomorrow. And the honest truth is, you might not even make it another second.
Yeah.
So you might as well just have a good time.
Why be afraid about tomorrow when you can be happy about today?
Exactly.
I mean, in my opinion, there's only one moment. It's this moment.
Right now. Exactly.
Yeah, all right. And that's a continuous moment. Even right now, it's still that one moment. And that moment is stretched on all throughout history. And it will stretch on all throughout eternity. So in a way, you get to share a moment with every person who has ever lived or whoever will. And that's an encouraging thought. You're not
Absolutely
alone.
It is. Absolutely it is. You know, there's that theory that there is no time, there's only right now. You know, the time is a manufactured, you know, concept where we're living in right now. You know, what happened a few seconds ago doesn't even really matter because there's only right now.
Yeah. And that's the thing that people don't get. Like, oh, but you're talking about the extermination of the human race and Agenda 21 being implemented and all these vaccines and the bioweapons being released and all of this kind of stuff. You're not talking about right now. You're talking about the future. No, actually, bro, all of that stuff is going on right now, actually. You know, I'm sorry to inform you, but this isn't something that I'm talking about that's happening in a far-flung future or galaxy. I know where it's headed, but the thing is, we can only stop it if we stop it right now, okay?
Right.
And what's more important in your life? All right, seriously, I mean, just think about this. Think about all the things that you got in your life. You know, you got your family, you got your home, you got your possessions, and you got your missus, and you got your extended family. You know, grandparents, grandchildren. Some people have got them. You know, and you think, okay, what's more important, their survival, or them being enslaved to criminal, rapist bankers for the rest of their existence, or exterminated? What's more important than preventing that? You know, and seriously, try and think. What's more important than preventing all the things that you love and cherish from being stolen and exterminated?
Well, there's nothing, but I think a lot of person would say their iPod, their iPhone. that's where we're living now. You know what I mean?
I got nothing.
You're done now. I've ended the Vinnie Eastwood show myself.
Yeah. So you see, that's the thing. That's the thing that people don't get is that a lot of life and the very important decisions actually boil down to very freaking simple equations like that. It's like, can I be friends with this person? I don't know. Ask him a question. Well, if you were paid money, would you ever put on a black uniform, have a submachine gun, and at the government's behest, come into my house and exterminate me and my family? And they go, no, I'd never do that. Okay, cool, bro, we can be friends then, because we don't really have any fundamental disagreements, do we?
No, I honestly don't even mean that. I was speaking in the voice of the average American.
But what is the average American? Have you met the average American? What's his name? You know.
Yep.
See, there's no such freaking thing.
Yeah, you're right about that. You're right.
And that's another thing. Like when the president comes up and speaks, and he always goes, "My fellow Americans." Who the fuck are these fellow Americans? Are they your fellow?
30 million of them.
Are they like part of your freaking Skull and Bones alumni or something like that? Oh, these are my fellows. These are my peers. These are my fellow Americans. You know, you're full of BS, Mr. President. You don't know what are your fellow Americans, and because you have no bonds of fellowship to them, you have no loyalty to the flag, the constitution, the people, or the freedom of the country. Okay? There's nothing in those words that rings true for me. Because there is no such thing as an average American. Just like there's no such thing as a forest. It's only trees. It's just an abstraction. It's something that you make up so that you can categorize everything and put it into a little box. And you're unfortunately, right. I found what happens is if you try to put everything else into a little box, what you've done really is you've actually boxed yourself in. Because you like to define things. You like things to be solid. You like things to be stable. You like things to all have a label and a place. And the reality is there is so much randomness and so many things you don't know that even to put things in a box is almost a waste of time because they're not actually in that box or whatever. You're the one in the frickin' box because of your thinking mentality. And you wind up going round and round chasing your tail and you start getting effed off with everybody who you think is your enemy when they're really your friends. And you start getting friendly with everybody who you think are your friends but are really your enemy.
my whole thing with the president in general is that he speaks for 330 million people, and I don't know if that's even remotely possible.
Well, I don't know. If you have a look at you live in the States, so
yeah.
You'd know this. People are so dumb, like it's beyond a joke. And, like, when I went there when I was 14, it was, like, 14 years ago kind of thing, I was astounded at how utterly dumb everybody was. Like you go to New Zealand and so on and so forth. Sure, we got stupid people here, but the Americans are in a league of their own.
You're right.
It's like there's this... It's like the American Idol... is a perfect example of this. Those people who cannot for the life of them sing at all.
Without auto-tune.
They sound like a guinea pig caught in a lawnmower, some of them. It is just painful to
horrendous.
Listen to. Yet, they're so dumb. They have so little capacity for self-analysis that they actually think that they're good. And what's worse... is that they have a whole group of friends and family who are also that frickin' dumb that they also believe that they're good too. You know? We're in
American crisis. Exceptionalism.
It's crisis mode, you know? Just frack. My God. It's like 60th or 80th or something in terms of education in the world. 80th place.
I know, we are...
My God!
It's shameful. It's shameful. It is. Absolutely. Dude. And if you don't step outside your own education system, your own, you know, what they try to teach you to indoctrinate you, and if you don't go outside of that, you will be an idiot. Yeah. An absolute...
Not well-traveled, the Americans, either? Only one in nine or something has a passport. One in mm-hmm. seven can't locate America on a world map.
I didn't know that statistic. That's frightening.
Uh-huh. The FDA has ruled that pizza is a vegetable because it's got 2 tablespoons of tomato paste.
But I think, you know, I have to, you know, I agree with you 100%, but I think a lot of it is planned. I don't think...
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Our government doesn't want us to think out, to think...
Well, of course, because
box,
then you'd figure out that the entire population was kicked out 30 frickin' years ago and that nobody gives a frack about you and they're just wanting to tax you and fatten you up so that you're much easier to herd and kill later on, okay? That's basically it. Fat, stupid, easy to kill.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
You know, just think about that. That's a really cold, dark realization, isn't it? Oh, my God. Whoa,
we are cattle.
Hold on. What's the food pyramid about? Well, is it the pyramid of the Illuminati? Well, kind of. Have a look. Okay, well, what's this food pyramid here? Okay, well, we need to eat. We need to be eating lots of grains and pasta and rice and stuff like that, right? No, you're actually supposed to be eating lots of colored fruits and vegetables. That's the main part of the pyramid that actually should be there. Okay, well, look at all of this stuff over here, you know, dairy products and what have you, only a tiny bit of that. No, you're actually supposed to have a decent quantity of dairy products and all of that. What about all of this? Is a tiny little portion of meat and a tiny little portion of sweets. No, actually, it's a big portion of meat and no frickin' sweets. Okay? They've got the pyramid upside down. when you go to a farmer and you ask him, what do you feed your cattle when you want to fatten them up for slaughter? And he'll show you a food pyramid that matches the Food and Drug Administration's food pyramid.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah. Now, however, I really don't like people who think that this is a lost cause, that people can't be educated, that they're too dumb, that this is, they just can't be saved or whatever. That is a self-defeatist mentality that's just as dumb as the dumb people are, in my considered opinion. After all, did you know everything before you became a truth movement thing? Did you always know about the New World Order? Did you always know about the vaccine schedules? Did you always believe that there was something wrong with absolutely everything and you're questioning your entire freaking life? For the vast majority of people, hell no. Hell no. We were like ready, willing, and able to be freaking slaves, to be fattened up for slaughter, weren't we? Weren't we?
Too freaking stupid
to know anything that's going on. And so you think that if it happened to you, that suddenly, miraculously, you're the only one that's capable of it happening to, even though there's all evidence to the contrary, that everybody can be woken up, provided the right information at the right time, and the right amount of times can actually be pumped at them in order to wake them out of their slumber. If we take control of the media, and we're already in the process of doing it, we can use the very brainwashing tools that we use to make us into slave mentality sheep that are ripe for the slaughter. We can turn us into powerful individuals that cannot be stopped from pursuing our own happiness, our own dreams, and to expose those that would commit scumbaggery against the people of our nations and all of the things that we hold dear. They are under threat, and when you are under threat, you best respond and defend against that threat. Sometimes you don't even need to defend, you just go out and frickin' attack them. Take a camera out, go up to a politician, call them a scumbag through a megaphone. It feels great. I can assure you, I have done it many, many times. And when you're up against these people that are enslaving you, suddenly you realize, oh my God, they don't actually have any freaking power. All they've got is these uniforms and things like that, and the only reason why I was afraid of them is because I thought that those uniforms had power, but actually they're just a uniform. They're just animated by some piece of trash who has an 80-point IQ and is roided up in steroids and stuff like that, who doesn't have brains to save his life and only has the qualifications in order to write out a ticket even though he misspells your frickin' name.
It's right there in front of him.
They got nothing. We got all the chips. We got all the intelligence. We got all the integrity. We got all the honor. We got all the creativity in this fight. They've squandered all of theirs by dumbing down the population and recruiting the best and brightest in order to be psychopathic scumbaggery individuals with no creativity anymore. We've got the ability to outthink, outplay, and outlast and be the survivor. They don't. What are they going to do? Lock themselves away in their deep underground military bases, like 10 kilometers underground, in the dark, with all of their friends that are the worst, most disgusting pedophile, rapist, frickin' murdering scumbag gangsters that the world has ever seen on the face of frickin' existence? Locked underground with them? It sounds like poetic justice to me!
And one thing you said, they get what they deserve.
See, but unfortunately, Most people don't get what they deserve. Everybody ends up exactly where they deserve to be because all of your decisions and all of the things that you do actually make you what you are and put you where you are. George H.W. Bush is where he deserves to be because he worked really hard at being a scumbag.
He really did.
And so he became one of the biggest scumbag, evil pieces of trash you could ever conceive of. And he's worked really hard at it and he deserves to be where he is.
I guess you got a point there.
Okay, you know, so it works both ways. If you do lots of really good things and you get into a good position, that's cool. You deserve to be there. If you do lots of bad things and you get yourself into a bad position where you've got even more power over people than they've even got over their own life and so on and so forth, you deserve that too because you really worked at it. You've done your job well, haven't you?
I think what people have to understand, what we have to understand ourselves, is that not everyone is going to come along for this ride. They're going to kick and scream because they're stuck in their own paradigm of the state control.
It's not their own paradigm, though, is it?
No, it's not. But you know what I'm saying. It's kind of like they want to be there, and they're not going to think outside the box because this is.
Do they really want it? They're not even conscious of them making a choice. You know. That's the interesting thing. It's like that scene in The Matrix, is that nobody would accept the program unless they were given a choice. And that's the thing that we all have, is we all have choice. And you never know what will wake somebody up, you know? My sister, I think about a year or two ago, you know, she was just telling me stuff about food or whatever, and I told her about the chemtrails and how the Monsanto has these aluminium resistant seeds and so on and so forth. And then just earlier on this year, she invites me out to this skeptics meeting in the pub, who are talking about frickin' GMOs and basically giving a pro-GMO sort of flare from this stupid girl from fresh out of university kind of thing. And it's like, I've got absolutely no life experience and don't know what I'm talking about, but I had authority figures tell me all of this stuff, so therefore I think it's true, and now I'm going to brainwash all of you.
Working for Monsanto.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she's bucking for an early employment opportunity. but after it, or whatever, on the trip home from that, my sister asked me about, you know, Monsanto with the genetically modified things. Does that have anything to do with chemtrails? It's like, boom, I got you. You know, you plant that seed, so to speak.
No, but I mean, the thing that Monsanto created Agent Orange, and then we're like, oh, they're just fine. Let's yeah, everything they're doing is legit. You know, come on.
Yeah,
it's what world are we living in here?
Well, basically, I got two general rules for life. You know, if you want to make an assumption about life, you better make it a very good assumption so that you're correct most of the time, right? So. Everything that comes from an official source, just assume that it's the exact opposite. So if they say they're going to war for peace, it says they're going for war.
That's it.
And it's probably a war that they orchestrated in the first place. And a second assumption, if you can't make it at home by yourself in your kitchen, then it's probably some kind of soft kill by a weapon.
It more than likely is.
Yeah. I mean, you can't make McDonald's at home. It's just not possible. You know, you can't cram 1,000 different pieces of cow into a singular patty, can you?
Even though no one even knows what it is.
Yeah, that's like, what the traces are. And allegedly, this is a big allegedly here. I heard this thing on this guy was on the Templar Set Radio or something like that. You know, the Satanic Radio Show, and somebody sent me this link to them talking about it, and they're like laughing because they apparently take kids off the street. And there's 400,000 kids that go missing in America every year, 100,000 in the UK, about maybe 15,000 or so, or maybe about 10,000 or whatever in New Zealand. I don't know the statistics for New Zealand, but I do know the UK and the US. Do you remember, like, way back in the day that there used to be, like, kids' pictures on milk bottles?
Right.
And there aren't anymore? Because there's not enough frickin' milk bottles. Uh-huh. And what this guy was saying, laughing as he did, he says, you know, we've got friends and contractors who own big shares in McDonald's and the meat processing factories and everything like that. So after we've done killing the babies and drinking their blood after we torture them, because when you torture somebody and then you drink their blood, their blood's all full of adrenaline and it gives you a really great high and there's a lot of rejuvenating effects to it, then they just toss the baby's carcass into the meat grinder and then they grind them up and make them into McDonald's patties and sell it back to you. And he's just laughing, you stupid goy. We're feeding your own kids back to you.
I got nowhere to go now either, man.
Yeah, see, and these are the really dark avenues because I was just thinking about this about different levels. You know how people say, like, seen that Johnny Depp movie, The Ninth Gate? You have to enter through nine gates or whatever to reach some sort of enlightenment. I'm not sure if that's what the movie was about, but that's how I interpret it. It's kind of like one of the first steps is to realize that you're being lied to. One of the second steps is that you realize that you're being lied to about absolutely everything and that nothing is as you see. Basically, the first step to enlightenment is realizing that you're not frickin' enlightened. The first step to giving up alcohol is realizing that you've got a drinking problem. Mm-hmm. Right? You've got a propaganda problem, ladies and gentlemen.
Propaganda sickness.
Yeah. And it's like a virus and it attaches to you. It infects you. It controls you, you know, like a puppet. And you think about what are the things beyond that? Okay, so we've figured out that not only am I being lied to, but I'm being lied to about everything. So that means there must be a truth about everything. if there's a lie, right? So then you've got to figure out what the truth is to everything. And that's a long, long journey because, you know, how long did it take you to get indoctrinated into the system? Like, what, 20 years, give or take, that you spent in high school,
learning their lies, right?
Primary school, and then postgraduate study in the university, then working in a couple of jobs or whatever, being taught the corporate structure, which is all a big lie and all of this BS and everything the whole way across the thing. Some people being in the military have been lied to the entire time. So you think that all of a sudden, after a year or two of being awake to the truth, you're suddenly going to know everything that's going on. You're going to be freaking kidding me, bro. It's going to take you probably an equal, if not greater, time to unlearn the lies that you've learned, because the lies that you've learned are the things that have been dictating your thinking process this entire time. How on earth are you going to get the hell out of that? You know? And then stuff goes into deeper things, because it's not just the physical things that are under threat, you know, contaminants and parabens in your underarm deodorant and BPA that turns you female if you're drinking out of the plastic bottles and the leaching chemicals and the formaldehyde and the Coke Zero and the so on and so forth. You know, everything's like a threat. And then you've got to figure out how to actually deal with the threat. And I've dealt with the threat with humor. So I've managed to kind of give myself an anti-carcinogenic solution to being having the Shiite Muslims get out of me at all times. Okay? So, you know, figure out everything that's a lie. Start learning the truth. Then learn your coping mechanisms. Then you can go even deeper into some of the real darkest of the dark. The occult. The child kidnapping rings that are being run through the government all over the place.
That's proven, by the way. That's proven. Yeah.
Ritualistic child abuse, satanic cults. Then there's mind control to think about. There's just infinite freaking topics. Basically, there is no end to this ride. You become, if you're healthy, a perpetual student. Always learning, always thinking, always asking questions, and you'll be like this for the rest of your life. You can't get to the point where you go, okay, I've got everything sussed. I've got it sussed. Okay, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Republican, and I'm a gas station attendant. That's my life. Okay, you'll never be able to think that way again, because people have asked me how to define myself, and the answer is, I don't know. If you find out, tell me, bro, because I don't know.
When you get that information, like the child sex rings and all that just awful, awful stuff, you can't go back, because you've heard you're at the pit of mankind now. You're at the bottom of the barrel. You've reached the bottom of the barrel. There's nothing lower.
There's much worse. No, seriously, this is my theory that I've come up with over my many years of looking into scumbaggery. Is that it's a fractal, okay? You know what a fractal is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just a repeating pattern. So the people call it the fractal universe. So if you look at the Earth looks like a cell. If you look at the universe looks like a brain cell. And it's the exact same pattern repeated over and over and over and over at different scales. So I've come to the conclusion that the world operates under a fractal as well. Fractal scumbaggery. That for every
I like that.
Every instance of scumbaggery that you look into, you'll notice that when you kick over the rock, more scumbaggery starts to become apparent to you. And then you look at that scumbaggery that's underneath the rock, and you think to yourself, oh my God, this scumbaggery is actually going not only underneath the rock, it's actually going deep into the surf, it's going deep into the soil of the earth. And then you look deep into the soil of the earth, and you found out that there's this giant root of scumbaggery that's actually right down there in the center of the earth, that's actually controlling everything. And then you look into one of the cells of that root that's in the center of the earth, and you find out that it's actually part of a concocted scheme of another entire civilization of ethereal scumbaggery that's actually taking control of this kind of thing. And then you look deeper into that form of ethereal scumbaggery, and then you see what I'm saying? There is infinite scumbaggery. Alright? That's my realization. Oh my God. I just woke up one morning and I realized that I live in a pool of infinite scumbaggery.
And you're never going to escape, is the thing.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I don't want to escape. I want to fight. I'm not going to run away from this.
Right, right.
This is my home. This is my planet. This is my country. This is my body. This is my mind. This is my soul. Nobody else's. This little section of it is mine, and mine alone. Anybody who wishes to take it from me is going to have to risk what I might do to them if they try. and I'm not a violent person anymore. I was once as a kid, you know, when you get beaten by your dad or whatever, you inevitably become violent. I think about the age of 15, I stopped. I haven't laid a hand on anybody since. I didn't want to be violent anymore. Didn't want to be like my father. Didn't want to be who I thought that I was about to become. And you can make those decisions. And just because there's fractal scumbaggery going on, it more or less means that your thinking process changes to the point where you never think that you know it all, and you're never not listening unless you've heard it before. You know what I'm saying? I hear lots of people criticize my show because I have on people that even I don't agree with, you know, people from the left or the right, or people talking about aliens or reptilians or so on and so forth. And even if I don't like fully agree or anything, I like to listen. Because even if what they were saying wasn't true, it's still very interesting.
Right. I like the forum. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, what do you got to lose? What's so precious, you know? Oh, I spent an hour and a half listening to somebody talk about bloody reptilian aliens. I don't like that subject. It's really stupid.
Well, that's just it, man. As much as people, they give David Icke a bunch of crap, but you can't deny he's a pretty interesting guy.
Yeah.
A pretty interesting cat.
It's quite funny, like, there's now truther cliches. Have you heard of these? You know?
No, I haven't.
I think it's disinfo. That's a truther cliche. You see that all the time. Oh, I think it's disinfo. Or oh, it's more fear porn. Or
that one, that's hilarious.
There's a number of truth or cliches out there, and this goes back to what I was talking about earlier about psychos on radio. It's like when you wake up, you start to think that, oh my god, I'm getting out of the society of lies and BS, and I'm getting into the truth movement where everybody's honest, decent, doesn't rip each other off or try to steal ideas or steal advertisers or sabotage your radio career or talk about you behind your back or like actually be an informer or something like that. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
It's all there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like in New Zealand, there's a song, everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. And that's basically what's happened. I've dawned on this realization. It's like, oh my God, if you were a scumbag before joining the truth movement, you're just a scumbag who happens to be in the truth movement. You haven't left that behind, bro.
you didn't like leave your scumbaggery behind you. You're still just that same scumbag.
Yeah. Everywhere you go, you always take the scumbaggery with you. Everywhere you go, always take the scumbaggery.
Pay attention to Rockefeller.
Yeah. You know, it would be quite funny. Wouldn't this thing be poetic, you know? What was it? Have you ever seen The Life of Brian? Monty Python's The Life of Brian?
Life's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Life's a piece of shit. When you look at it. That's why you must remember to smile and laugh and dance and sing. But I was just thinking, you know, wouldn't it be like a fitting end? You know, the stoning scene where it's just like... you should buy some Storm's Love. Oh, but there's lots of them all over the ground. But not like this, sir. But not like this, sir. It's craftsmanship. Look at that. All right, I'll take 2 points, 2 flats, and a packet of gravel. Who's being stoned today? Oh, it's David Rockefeller. Rockefeller being stoned? Okay, I can dig with that. Why are you trying to
execute me? All I said was say Jehovah.
Oh, Rockefeller.
Yeah, like, imagine Rockefeller being stoned to death, you know, Bob Marley style would be classic.
We would see some kind of victory and some kind of poetic justice in that, I think. But
yeah.
I'll never that when he came on he didn't come on the Alex Jones show, there was a clip. It'd be funny here if he came on the Alex Jones show, but it was showing him in a wheelchair. And Alex Jones says, I never wanted to see a guy in a wheelchair. I never wanted to, you know, think of a person in a wheelchair, but this actually made me feel kind of good.
He's killing a lot of people! Leave Chile! Leave Chile! What a bad man!
you saw that too, right?
It was so awesome. Oh, God, it was awesome. See, and that's the thing. One dude with a camera and a loud voice boom! Instant freaking sensation. Do you have any idea how many people were suddenly emboldened, who suddenly felt a lot better, who were suddenly seeing an example of humanity fighting back, even though he virtually couldn't even speak English properly, and it was still that freaking inspiring and so awesome to just see somebody telling the truth right in their freaking face? No fear.
That's right. That's right. And Rockefeller, you know, he's so oblivious to it. He just thought they're, oh, he's here to greet me in his country. No, not quite.
Yeah, and they just kind of ignore you. That's the funny thing about it, these scumbaggery individuals, isn't it?
Well, we don't exist, you know.
It's like we're shadows passing through mist.
Unfortunately, yeah, it's a good way to put it. We are. They see everyone in their globalist community, but they don't see, you know, the people that actually exist in it, in the system that they're destroying, or the system that they operate in. You know, our system is, you know, obviously a better one, you know, but.
Yeah. Well, they see everything with their all seeing eye, except the existence of any individual.
Is there a way for us? And the globalists, and this is just ridiculous, I'm even saying this, to coexist. I hate that word, man. I hate that word, but coexist together.
I do believe so, and I think there's been a lot of well-documented cases where the elite have had to been stepped down because of public pressure and not experience reprisal as an example, and not be able to simply re-enter in the corrupt form that they once were, because they willingly give up their power structure in exchange for immunity. South Africa, for example, the racist apartheid regime, governed by a minority of whites and so on and so forth, was gradually losing its power because of activists and something, and people all over the place, and the massive black population really undermining everything that they were doing. And the reason why the whites were desperately clinging onto their powers because they were afraid of reprisals. They were afraid that they would be pulled out of their cars and beaten, that their homes and nice mansions would be invaded by blacks, and they'd be have their daughters raped in front of their eyes and so on and so forth. But when it became apparent that they were about to lose in any way, regardless of how hard they fought, regardless of how many troops they put on the streets, how many tear gas riots they put down, that they kept coming. That it was an intractable war. They couldn't have beaten them even if they wanted to. And that's why they kind of also came up with race-specific bioweapons called AIDS, which are 50 times more likely to infect your cells if you're black, incidentally. Mm-hmm. What happened was, though, they decided, the blacks decided, not the whites, that they didn't want reprisals, they didn't want revenge. And they approached them and just said, we want all this to stop. We don't want to be violent against you. We don't want you to be violent against us. We just want to be able to govern this country fairly. We don't want to take any of your property off of you. Everything is forgiven, basically. If you give up your power now, everything is forgiven. And you can live in peace and harmony for the rest of your days. But you won't have this power anymore to hurt people. And they said, you know what, that's actually a pretty attractive offer. And they took them up on it. And I believe that we could do that. You know, there's plenty of massive Rothschild mansions all over the world and everything like that. They could live on these big estates. They could have all this. They could have all the fine cheeses and wines and Dom Perignon champagne until they're blue in the face. You know, who cares? Who cares? It'd be a very, very small sacrifice in order to broker that arrangement where they live in luxury exile for the rest of their existence, not having to lower their standard of living at all, but just relinquish all the power and stop committing scumbaggery across the entire planet.
Mass murder on a global scale, right.
So
right.
That would seem like a reasonable compromise, wouldn't it? And it'd be far more worth it, rather than trying to get justice and having half the population exterminated in the process. You know what I'm saying? There is far greater argument for an unjust peace than a just war.
So how do we broker this deal here?
I don't know. It's just an idea at this point, you know. You know how children send letters to Santa. You know, they send letters to somebody that doesn't frickin' exist every year. What if you got those children to actually start writing letters every year to somebody who does exist, who could actually provide them with presents? You know, Mr. Amshel Rothschild, for Christmas, I want a decreased level of scumbaggery. I want a pony, and I want to not get vaccinated with thimerosal in my vaccines.
He's like, well, you get the pony.
You just imagine them, you know, just cracking it open. Like, oh, there's another sack of mail here for Rockefeller. Oh, man, Rothschild letters are big this year.
That's hilarious.
I mean, the US Postal Service could really, you know, experience some kind of revival, you know? Write a letter to these very charitable agents of evil Satanism to give you a present of not being such an evil, conniving piece of trash every year, you know?
Can you please just cut it out? Maybe
the school system could do it. You know, they can cut out little figures of people holding hands with the fold-out paper kind of stuff and write messages on it, you know. We want your family to die horribly in car accidents, you evil scum. You know, I mean, just something really nice that they can sit by the fireplace at Christmas with their 9/11 World Trade Center tower wrapped in Christmas lights that catches fire through the electrical system, shorting out in their 200-year-old mansion estate, and the whole cardboard twin tower would frickin' explode into flames while they're reading all these abusive letters from people who want them to stop committing scumbaggery on them, but it won't collapse.
But exactly, those towers would not collapse because fire wouldn't bring that down, right?
Yeah.
That's another story, though, isn't it?
Hey, well, you know, you got to be silly every now and again. I mean, the world's silly, isn't it? And I say, do what the Romans do, do as the Romans do, as they say. You know, in fact, the Romans had an interesting saying, and I think this is one of the interesting points about feminism to bring up at this particular juncture is Romans had to control people, right? Lots and lots of control over people, and they had to do it by force. You know, they didn't really have too much play with sophisticated propaganda campaigns, although they were really good at that too. It says, if you want to control the men, you control the women.
Yes, you do.
And if you want to control the women, threaten the kids. Why do you think almost every single draconian evil piece of legislation is tagged with the line, "Oh, we've got to do it for the children"? It's because they're threatening your kids, ladies, so that they can control your thinking process and that you will nag your man into accepting the indoctrinated scumbaggery.
That's right, right. It works full circle.
Yeah.
It sure does.
I mean, they've got a deadly, freaking brilliant scheme. I mean, it's evil, but it's brilliant.
Oh, it's definitely evil, but it seemed to work for them pretty well. They did well for themselves. They really did.
Yeah. I was just thinking about, do you know where the Rockefeller founding money came from? Have you ever heard of Big Bill Rockefeller? Guess what his career was?
What was it?
He was a traveling snake oil salesman.
Oh, yeah. I have heard that. And now that is something right there. Like, he became the richest man. He was the first billionaire, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's frightening.
Yeah.
We let those guys take control. This is really on us.
You know, there should be a movie about Big Bill Rockefeller, you know, just making stuff up and scamming half of the Old West and then being made the first billionaire through pure scumbaggery, you know? But instead, what kind of origin story do we get? Oh, yeah, the Wolverine origin story. Imagine like X-Men, Rockefeller origins.
It's a rocket, yeah.
You know,
I don't think Hugh Jackman could play John D. himself, but
yeah, I don't know. I think like Patrick Stewart would be a good John D. Rockefeller.
He really would. I think he would.
Mm-hmm. Really good. And I do think that this is something that people don't really understand about the what history actually is. You know, you start talking history to people and they instantly switch off a lot of the time. And history is so interesting. Okay, you know, think about this. Where have all the best scripts and films and bloody books and so on and so forth come from? All these ideas and all these things that are all based on reality. You know, there's not that much creativity left in Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. I assure you. Okay? And if you doubt it, Rocky VI. End of argument.
You just ended the whole thing. I was going to cope with something too, but I don't have anything because Rocky VI ended it all.
Yeah. Because you just can't get away from that.
We've touched on everything here, Vinny. We have Rocky VI and Rockefeller all in one conversation, man.
Rockefeller VI.
Rockefeller VI.
Should we be more like Rockefeller 666, but yeah.
I would like to see that movie.
Yeah. Well, what occurs to me is also these people must have a really obscene, dark sense of humor as well. And this is what happens to people in triage units. You know, you see people throwing up, like they'll reject a chemotherapy drug or something like that, and they'll spew from the bed and they'll actually hit the ceiling with a massive jet of vomit and so on and so forth. And then blood starts spurting out of their throat where you gave them a tracheotomy and that kind of thing. And you're starting to get this blood all over your hands, and the blood's mixing with the spew and it's getting all chunky and it's into your hands, and then part of it's gargling and going back down his throat and so on and so forth, and he's not awake and he's not feeling it, but you are, and you're viciously trying to quickly plug the gap so that the person in front of you is disgusting, covered in vomit, covered in blood, doesn't frickin' die so that you don't lose your frickin' job, you know? And so you make jokes about it, you know? You're kind of like, hey guys, check it out, it's like I'm playing a recorder, you know? You know, just plugging the hole on his throat kind of thing, and then whistling and then playing with it like it's a piccolo. You know, I mean, I was just making that up just for the sake of argument, turning something horrible into something zany. And that's how you'll always tell who the good doctors are, the ones who aren't psychopaths, is they'll always be laughing and joking, and often joking quite brutally. It's because the things that they've seen require a very brutal sense of humor. Like, basically, the worse the lifestyle you is, the more hearty and strong your sense of humor has to be. So you could just imagine what was going through the heads of Bill Hicks and George Carlin, God rest their eternal infinite wisdom.
Absolutely.
The amount of content that they brought out that was just deeply harsh and just but fracking funny, they must have seen and heard some shit.
Well, think about how young Bill Hicks died. He was 32 years old.
Didn't even make it to 33.
No, he didn't. The big number. So
it's a sad day when you try to remember these people and all of the kind of. I actually credit Bill Hicks with a large part of my awakening. Like when I was in university, my first year at Dunedin, I was listening to Bill Hicks's albums and so on and so forth, and recordings of his live radio shows so regularly that I was capable of reciting them. You know, like an hour long Arizona Bay kind of thing, I could recite it from start to finish, and I can't really do that anymore. I don't really have time to listen to a whole bunch of stuff because I'm too busy freaking talking on radio, which actually kind of pisses me off sort of thing. I'm sorry, Vinny. Yeah, maybe I'm just in love with the sound of my own voice. Actually, I really am in love with the sound of my own voice. You know, easy. But I do find it fun actually, like the novelty of being on radio, because I've been ignored most of my life. You know, I'm the fifth of five kids. Dad left when we were 10. Didn't even give me much attention until then. And then 17 years later, I only got to see him like once, twice a year, maybe, or something like that. And now he's gone. So just kind of neglect and being rough round. And I got suspended from high school like 17 or 18 times or something like that for bad behavior. And I just really hated life. To a large degree, I hated being ignored. I hated people not taking me seriously. And now people are paying attention to me and they're taking me seriously and they really appreciate what I'm doing. And at the same time, I'm actually really benefiting people's lives, you know? Because there's just so many people that donate to me all the time. Some of them just, you know, drop around to my house, give me $100 note, you know, that kind of thing. I've been literally suckling at the teat of my listeners for the last for the last 2.5 years, basically, they've paid for absolutely everything that I own, pretty much. All my lighting, computers, TV screen, monitors, microphones, megaphones, cameras, everything you could conceivably think of, all my clothing, shoes, gas, cars, the lot. Everything has been paid for pretty much 100% by the kind, generous donations of my listeners. And my friend Mike was over here earlier, just before he started this show here. And he's my bandmate. And if you go to, and this is a big plug for us as well, if you go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and you click on the Parky Hachis, you'll see a picture of me and Mike there on the homepage. You click on that and you can listen to the album that we made. And if you like it, donate some money. And while he was over here, we were kind of prepping to get on the show. And what he was telling me is that he's out busking a lot. And he said that it's restored his faith in humanity, because he'll be out there when it's windy or raining or whatever, and he'll be just about to pack down, and the 12-year-old girl comes over and gives him a $10 note. And then 2 minutes later, another person gives him a $5 note, and then another gives him a $5, and then another gives him a $10. And he made $50 in 30 minutes. Oh, no, in 50 minutes. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what's happening is because he's busking so regularly and he's getting so much appreciation and generosity from ordinary, everyday people, feels like it's restored his faith in humanity. And I'm sitting there going, you think you've got your faith restored in humanity, bro? I had somebody give me a 500 euro donation once, okay? A euro's worth like $2 US. Okay? You don't know what generosity and the love of people who appreciate what you do feels like. You know, you really don't have any concept of what it's like to actually do something good for humanity and have it actually be appreciated and quantitatively appreciated, so that you don't have to worry about where your next meal is coming. I mean, most of my listeners are twice my age. You know that?
I didn't know that. I would assume that your listeners were actually younger or... No.
Well, actually, most of my listeners that assume that I'm older, you know, they assume that I'm like 35 or 40 or something like that. So no, I'm still 28, and I do think that I lean on my listeners quite a bit, and they always come through for me. Always, you know, I feel this kind of real love and appreciation, because I actually make a difference in people's lives, and I've started to notice just how much of a difference I've been making because of the increased attention, the huge amounts of very positive comments, the help I've been receiving, the donations, and the website traffic skyrocketing, and people inviting me on their radio shows as is happening right now. You know, I'm actually really having a true positive effect in the world. And from somebody to go from being suspended 17 times at high school, being busted for selling weed, and dropped out of university, and being fired from three tops, basically leaving three top sales jobs kind of in a row, to go from that to this in a period of about 6 years, that's a major transition that I've gone through here. And because I've been through such a dramatic transformation, because I don't do things by halves. I usually try to do things as intense as I can. I'm done fracking around, basically. I'm not messing around. I ain't playing. I mean, I'll have fun, but I ain't playing.
Absolutely, man. I think you do make a difference in people's lives, and I think it's showing, and I think you deserve everything you get, man. So,
I probably deserve a lot more, actually, now that I think about it.
You know?
I mean, basically, the more I get given, the more I do. And that's the thing, is every bit of reward that I get is a motivation to do something else to be rewarded for, you know. So I've got...
Well, what you put out, you know, theoretically you get back, but, you know.
Yeah, like a slut.
Right. She always gets back. Wait, I don't know.
She has much back, as Sir Mix-a-Lot would say.
It's like you know America.
Yeah, it's the thing. When you grow up on American movies, American television, and get woken up by Truth or American talk radio show hosts, you become fairly Americanized. So naturally, an American gave me an American-based talk radio show because I'm a New Zealander who knows more about America than most Americans do.
You probably do. No question about it.
Yeah, okay, well, see, as anybody knows more about America than the average American does.
There we go, an average American.
Yeah. The alleged American.
Well, that's just it. We're such an amalgamation of all these different characters, all these different places. We're not. There's no such thing as an American culture. We're mutts. We're nothing. Well, that's just it.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, there's this strong backbone. Now, somebody told me the other night. They're talking about like hanging out with people or whatever. Because when you're a truther, it's really hard to find good friends. But once you find good friends, they're really good friends. You know, with the fact that they're talking about, they're generally independent type minded people who are actually really good, honourable, decent. You know, honest. And people are still sticking around like they're old friends. You know, people that they've been hanging around with for most of their lives who haven't actually changed since they first met them. Right? You see, you don't really want those friends kind of thing. And, but I'm going out and I'm trying to make friends with all these people and they're just treating me like dirt or whatever. Okay, bro, when you're going out and you're searching for gold and you're panning it out and all of that kind of stuff, what are you looking for? Are you looking for the small nuggets of gold or are you looking for huge pieces of shit? That's what people don't get, is that society is full of shit. It's full of shit people. It's full of shit products. It's full of that. You're looking for the little nuggets of gold. You got to get your fingers into that massive swirling pool of poo and pick out.
And dig it out.
Dig it out. Dig through that poo and find those little nuggets of gold. And if your hands don't work, you're going to have to use your teeth. It might taste bad, but frack, at least you'll get some gold at the end of it. So put it in your teeth so that you don't have to actually get any of those mercury fillings, which will give you Alzheimer's and freaking other sorts of diseases as well. Okay. You know, people are just like, bro, you've got to really appreciate your friends, eh? You've got to appreciate the people that help you. And that's another thing Americans really say quite a lot. I appreciate it, you know. Whenever you give them a compliment or help them or give them something, Americans are very appreciative. And I also found that they're also very generous. And this is what I determine as the average American, or at least the positive elements of the alleged American. Likes to have a good time. Very interested in having fun. Very interested in being generous to people, making sure that you're fed, and also wanting to do things. You know, just actually build things or have some kind of creative outlet. You know, that's why a lot of the biggest bands are American. A lot of the biggest movie studios are American. Some of the greatest artists are American. The best Truth of Talk radio show hosts are American. Some of the most incredible inventors are American. Some of the brightest scientists are Americans. Okay, so you've got that big, awesome nugget of nougaty goodness embedded within the culture that, despite all of the poo that's been poured over the top of it, like gravy like shitty gravy on unsatisfying biscuits, okay? Like the biscuits and gravy and so on and so forth. You can still pull away all of that shit, all of that grime, all of that scumbaggery, and you'll notice that it is gold, and gold does not corrode. There is something great and deep and fantastic about being American, and people don't appreciate it anymore.
You're right.
Because they
You're
only
right.
associate being American with what the New World Order has wanted to turn America into.
You're absolutely right.
Remember where you come from, and you'll never lose your path.
That's awesome, Vinny. That's awesome.
I do believe and the power of the American spirit. I've got the American spirit. You know, George Carlin said the American dream is real, except you have to be asleep to believe it.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I'm living the American dream. I've got an American talk radio show host. I'm getting the fame. I'm getting the amount of money that I need to survive and so on and so forth. And I'm helping people. I'm creating stuff and whatever. So the American dream, you either have to be asleep to believe it or be living in New Zealand.
Live somewhere other than America if you want to live the American dream, right?
I mean, the American empire stretches the entire world. Why wouldn't the dream stretch that far too? I mean, it seems quite illogical, all of a sudden, doesn't it?
I don't know, Benny. I'm not living the American dream, and you are. I think something's wrong with this picture.
Yeah, it's because you're still living in America, bro. Okay.
Because America, New Zealand.
Yeah, because America's no longer America. America's just a branch of the New World Order. They've fully taken it over. They've taken the education out of the country. They've taken the taxation-free status of the country away. They've taken away the freedom of speech. They've taken away the freedom of expression. They've taken away the freedom of the press. They've taken away the right to bear arms. They've taken away posse comitatus. They've taken away everything that the Founding Fathers laid down to protect you from oppressive government. No wonder you don't recognise the country or identify with it anymore. It's because it's not yours. They've taken Absolutely. It over. They've turned it into something that it was never supposed to be.
In fact, it was warned against by every Founding Father.
Every Founding Father warned against it. Eisenhower warned against it. You were warned, but you didn't frickin' listen, did you, America? You were warned, but you were too busy watching Saturday Night Live and Sunday football. You were too busy drinking the beer and smoking the crack that the CIA smuggled in. You were too busy going to Justin Bieber concerts and watching Iron Man 3. You were too busy drinking 6 beers at the same time out of stacked glasses. You were too busy watching American Ninja Warrior. You were too busy working on your muscle car engine. You were too busy pumping iron on Venice Beach and flexing your pectoral muscles at passing women. You were too busy snorting cocaine through a silly straw.
I'd like to see that. Just someone attempt that.
Yeah, just the once, you know.
Just once, right? Right. Yeah. That's all it would take.
Yeah. Add a little wasabi in there. The guys from Jackass would do it. Cocaine and wasabi snorting.
Right. I think we can add Jackass is, once again, that's America right there, too. You're forgetting that, too.
Yeah.
That's also what we are.
Well, obviously, I didn't forget it. I just remembered it. Because the other element that I think is really important to stress here is to identify what is uniquely American and what is uniquely New World Order. Vastly different. People have forgotten that there is actually a difference. In New Zealand, there's a big culture here, particularly among socialists. Oh, American influence, American this, American that, as if all the Americans, which is different from America with a K. What defines it and makes it happen that way is if the bankers aren't in control of the legislation, as if they haven't paid off all the local sheriffs, as if they haven't shredded the Constitution at every available opportunity, as if the congressmen actually read the legislation they pass before they pass it, as if 9/11 wasn't an inside job, as if the entire apparatus of the military-industrial complex isn't the driving factor behind all of the foreign wars, all the foreign debt, all of the problems within society have been caused by not apathy, not misinformation, not indoctrination, not any other problem you can think of. There's one overarching problem that undermines it all, and it's the word that I've coined and used many times, scumbaggery. All right? Scumbaggery is the problem with America. Scumbaggery is the problem with New Zealand. It's not the New Zealanders that are the agents of scumbaggery. It's not the Americans. It's not even the English.
Although it's the scumbags.
It's the scumbags, all right? You can tell who the scumbags are because they commit scumbaggery, all right? It's pretty simple, you know? If it looks like a scumbag, walks like a scumbag, sounds like a scumbag, then it's probably a
Washington,
scumbag.
It's Washington, D.C.
Yeah, well, Washington, D.C. doesn't walk, as far as I know. It does have an enormous penis-looking structure right in the middle of there.
Strange obelisk.
Look at my dick. You know, look at my dick as I channel satanic energy down from the sky into the center of Washington, D.C., which has a massive floor program like a giant pentagram all around this giant dick. Look at my dick.
And look at my boobs too. Look at the boob on the top of the Congress there.
Isn't it interesting how the congressmen are in a structure that seems to be full of boobs and looks like a boob?
Makes a lot of sense. Actually.
Isn't it interesting also that the Naval Academy building in Washington D.C. that controls all the naval operations for the U.S. Navy through the whole way around the world is actually in the shape of a swastika? Isn't it interesting that the Department of Defense has got itself in a Pentagon, which is a pentagram that controls all the scumbaggery and illegal wars that sacrifice basically people's children all around the world? Isn't that interesting too? You know, have I gone overboard here? I don't think so. I think there's an awful lot of things that are going on there. Hey, you got more Masonic lodges per acre than any other place on earth in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Well, Vinny, you've depressed me. So, and enlightened me. So, we got that going for us.
Yeah. That's where I was going with this, you know. Depress you, then enlighten you.
And bring it back down, bring it back up.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
Man, it is the fastest 2 hours in radio. I'm not even on your show. I'm interviewing you, who does the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. But it's pretty smooth, man. You're a pretty smooth character, man. I appreciate you being a. Well, there it is. Appreciate that.
Told
you. I appreciate you being on the show, man. It's you're an awesome dude. I appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
I bet you do.
Well, you know, it's just like people. There's a form of narcissism. It's called benign narcissism. Bruce Lee had it. I'm the best martial artist that the world's ever seen. He freaking was. Muhammad Ali had it. I'm the best boxer that the world's ever seen. He was. See, narcissism is like loving yourself, right? I love myself, but I don't love myself for reasons that don't exist or reasons that I made up because I can't deal with how much of a douchebag I am. I love myself for good reasons. I'm a very nice guy. I'm a great talker. I'm very enlightened. I'm very wise. I'm a lot of fun to hang out with. I'm very creative. I accomplish a lot of really good things, not just for myself, but for the people around me and indeed the entire world. Everybody could benefit from listening to a little bit of Vinny Eastwood every now and again.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, just alleviate some of that stress, some of that pressure, some of that strain, and listen to the Vinny Eastwood show 5 days a week, if you can, at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Also, TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood isn't go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. And I do believe that if we all took ourselves a little less seriously and took what other people say about us less seriously as well, we'd be having a hell of a lot more of a fun time, have less stress, more happiness, more creativity, and more freedom. And stop trying to boss everybody around and make the world work the way you want it to. It works the way it works. It is the way it is. And unfortunately, you can only change that if you first change yourself, get your Shiite Muslim together, go out and start doing something about it. You know? What have you That's got right. to lose that the New World Order ain't going to take away from you already?
They've already taken it, so you might as well get on it.
Yeah, exactly. Restore some of your sanity.
That's right. Vinny, once again, thank you for coming on. And, you know, definitely be in touch, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you. I wish you could come on again. And, you know, your show is awesome. I encourage everyone to listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show. The Vinny Eastwood Show.
Yeah, because there's only one Vinny. It's me.
That's right. All right, man.
Cheers, bro.
It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate it.